What's up, guys? Welcome everyone to episode 23 today on Commute and Compute. I'm your host, Contra. On my way in to another glorious day of work. Today I want to embark on a little journey that's going to reshape, I think, how you see the world, how you see money, and how you see the future. I want to dive into the fascinating intersection of market economics, the inside of a brilliant mind, again, like I've spoken before on David Bahnsen, and the unstoppable force that is Bitcoin, all acknowledging the very real, very present fiat world we currently inhabit. And this isn't just, I think, about understanding a new asset. It's about understanding a paradigm shift. So for this episode, I want to explore how Bitcoin isn't just a speculative investment anymore, but truly a fundamental re-architecture of our financial reality. And essentially how corporate America is already catching on and paving the way for global transition. So buckle up. I want to get into it. And I think starting out, I think we need to understand some of the market economics at more of a basic level. And to truly grasp the significance of Bitcoin, we first need to understand the bedrock of economic thought that underpins much of our modern financial system, and especially even the criticisms leveled against it. Because this is where the insights of, again, Bahnsen become invaluable, I think. And again, for those unfamiliar with David Bahnsen, he's a prominent voice in the world of finance, an author, a chief investment officer. He's known for his deep commitment to free market principles and a robust understanding of capital formation and wealth creation and how they truly work. So what exactly is market economics? You know, I think at its core, a market economy is an economic system where the decisions regarding investment, production, and distribution are guided by price signals created by the forces of supply and demand. At its root, it's about competition, free trade, you know, private property, and crucially, minimal government interference. Minimal. And unlike centrally planned economies, market economies allow individual choices and self-interest to drive that economic activity, leading to what proponents argue is an increased efficiency and productivity. And I agree with that. And Bahnsen, in his work, consistently champions, I think, these principles. He often discusses how interventionists, monetary policies, excessive regulation, and government spending can distort these market signals, leading really to an unintended consequence like we see today, inflation and malinvestment. He emphasizes the importance of capital accumulation, dividend growth, and the long-term perspective in wealth creation, all rooted in that one basic premise of free markets, you know, essentially left to their own devices. And they are the most effective engines of prosperity, I believe. So, I mean, think about it. In a truly free market, prices reflect real scarcity and demand. And if something is scarce and highly desired, its price goes up naturally, signaling essentially to producers that there is an opportunity to create more of it. And then conversely, if something is abundant and not in demand, the price falls. This organic kind of feedback loop is what guides resource allocation and true innovation. So where does the friction arise? I think Bahnsen and many others who share, you know, his perspective often point to the role of central banks and government intervention. And I would again agree with that. Because when central banks essentially manipulate interest rates or engage in quantitative easing, they can essentially artificially lower the cost of money, incentivize debt, and then essentially it devalues currency. And then it really distorts the very price signals that a market economy relies on. It creates an environment where saving is disincentivized and speculation is more encouraged, often leading to bubbles and erosion of purchasing power for the everyday citizen. And this brings us, to the concept of fiat currency. You know, what is fiat? It's simply money that is not backed by a physical commodity, say like gold or silver. Its value is derived from government decree and the public's trust in that government. But the problem, you know, as these market advocates would contend, is that governments often have an incentive to print more of it. Of course they do, especially to fund, you know, spending or manage debt. And again, this leads to more inflation or a hidden tax on everyone's savings and labor. So I think to summarize, this first chunk, you know, market economics champions individual choice, also competition. And to finalize, I think it also prevents government intervention. And I'd say, you know, Bahnsen is a leading voice of this school of thought, often highlighting how government and central bank interference, particularly through fiat currency manipulation, can really undermine true market function and lead to economic instability. And if you're old enough, you've gone through cycles of this in the past. So where does, you know, Bitcoin fall in this fiat world? Where does it begin to start disrupting it? And so we just kind of laid the groundwork on basic market economics and the challenges of a fiat system, which is, you know, obviously amplified by central banks. But now I want to introduce the disruptor in all of this, which I believe is Bitcoin. And how does Bitcoin, you know, this decentralized digital asset, fit into this established framework, especially when, you know, we're still operating largely in a fiat world? Bitcoin, I think, at its core, is a response to the very problems that these market economists often highlight. It's a digital commodity created by code with a fixed verifiable supply of only 21 million coins. This scarcity is really a direct contrast to the infinite printing press of the fiat currencies we see today, especially in America. So think of it as digital gold, as most would say. But with even greater, you know, divisibility and transferability, like gold, its value is derived from its scarcity and the collective belief in its utility as a store of value. Unlike fiat, though, no central authority can simply decide to create more Bitcoin. They just can't. And this programmatic scarcity is a cornerstone of its appeal, particularly as a hedge against inflation and currency debasement. You know, when inflation essentially rises, the purchasing power of fiat currencies decline, which naturally drives investors and even ordinary people to seek alternative assets that can preserve their wealth. And Bitcoin has emerged as, I think, the leading contender in this regard. But Bitcoin's integration into our fiat world isn't without its own complexities. You know, for one, it's highly volatile. And I think that's most people's problem with it. But I think it's starting to diminish slowly. Its price swings obviously can be dramatic, which makes it, you know, a challenging currency for everyday transactions today. However, its proponents argue this volatility is a feature of its early adoption curve. And essentially that as its market cap grows and adoption spreads or widens, its volatility will decrease. And I think if you actually see, you know, the curve, that's actually happening and is true. And maybe another point of contention for people is essentially its classification. Is it a commodity? Is it a currency? Is it a security? You know, there different jurisdictions and institutions have different views, and this regular regulatory uncertainty can impact its widespread adoption. However, we're seeing an increasing trend these days towards clearer regulatory frameworks, which I think is a positive sign for its integration. And despite these challenges, guys, Bitcoin is undeniably gaining traction within the existing fiat system. We're seeing more and more on-ramps and off-ramps, allowing individuals and businesses to convert between fiat and Bitcoin with increasing ease. Again, another huge win. And I think this bridges the gap, ultimately, and allows Bitcoin to function as an alternative financial rail, even if it's not, you know, yet the primary one. So consider how it functions as a medium of exchange. While it's not widely accepted at your local grocery store yet, the Lightning Network, which is a layer 2 solution built on Bitcoin, for those who don't know, it is enabling near instant, low cost transactions, making Bitcoin way more visible for micropayments and faster settlements. And this is critical for its eventual use as an everyday currency. People want those fast payments. In essence, I think, you know, Bitcoin offers an alternative to the prevailing fiat system. It's a non-sovereign, censorship resistant, and permissionless form of money that operates outside the direct control of any government or central bank. And if this should definitely appeal to those who are wary of the unchecked power of central authorities in our day, and the inherent instability of the fiat currency. So while we live still in this fiat world, I think Bitcoin has already started to carve out its own space, offering a glimpse into what I think the future, where sound money principles are reestablished through these decentralized digital means. So, transitioning then, how is, say, corporate America, the engine of the fiat world, actually embracing Bitcoin? Because that shift is happening, and it's happening faster than some might even realize. One of the most, I think, significant trends we're witnessing is the adoption of Bitcoin as a corporate treasury asset. You know, traditionally, companies hold cash reserves in fiat currency or short-term, you know, government bonds. However, you know, with concerns about the inflation eroding purchasing power, and really a search for new avenues of value preservation, a growing number of forward-thinking companies are starting to add Bitcoin to their balance sheets. I mean, the obvious one is Michael Saylor of MicroStrategy. He's essentially the poster child for this. And led by Michael Saylor, you know, MicroStrategy has made a strategic decision to allocate a significant portion, you know, billions of dollars essentially of its treasury to Bitcoin. And Saylor views, you know, Bitcoin as a superior store of value to cash, a hedge against inflation, if you will. And definitely, I think he sees it as a long-term strategic reserve asset. And I think their success has inspired other companies to at least consider if not outright, you know, implement similar strategies. And I think other notable companies, maybe, you know, like Tesla, which sold some, you know, a few years back. But, well, they've had more of a, I guess, lighthearted relationship with Bitcoin. They did at one point hold a substantial amount on their balance sheet. You know, Jack Dorsey is another major player, deeply committed to Bitcoin. And he's not just, obviously, he's not in that same ball field. I would separate him. He's definitely more integrated and deeply committed to Bitcoin than these other people. I don't think even Saylor is really truly that deeply committed. But we could talk you know, more about Block in a moment. But you see in companies also like Galaxy Digital or like Fidelity, even, you know, Donald Trump Jr. or the, what is it, Trump's media company also getting ready to start buying, you know, millions and billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin on its balance sheet as well. So, and I guess the question that has to be posed is, why are they doing this? Well, several reasons. You know, first, I think it's to hedge against inflation. You know, companies are seeing their cash reserves essentially depreciate due to its inflationary pressures. And they see Bitcoin, with its fixed supply, you know, offer a potential anecdote. But second, you know, I think they're also trying to diversify. Especially, you know, diversify, I guess, their treasury assets beyond traditional, you know, fiat instruments. I think another one, the third, the strategic positioning. You know, companies that embrace Bitcoin early are positioning themselves as an innovative and future-oriented company, potentially attracting, you know, new talent and customers who are more aligned with this digital transformation. And maybe fourth, you know, operational efficiencies. You know, accepting Bitcoin can open up new markets. It can reduce these transaction fees. And like we spoke before, offer faster settlement times. I mean, especially for international transactions, right? But I think, you know, I guess going back to Jack Dorsey real quick and Block and his visionary approach. You know, Jack, the CEO of Block, he is a vocal Bitcoin maxi. He sees Bitcoin as the internet's native currency. And, you know, Block isn't just holding Bitcoin on its balance sheets. They are actively building out the infrastructure for Bitcoin adoption. And as of just yesterday, he just announced that Square will be accepting Bitcoin at all of its, you know, merchants and terminals globally. And they're planning on incorporating that as soon as possible. So that'll be fun to see how that plays out. So I don't think, you know, this isn't just about allowing customers to essentially pay with crypto or Bitcoin. It's about, I think, seamlessly integrating Bitcoin into the everyday commercial fabric of our day. Like Block is leveraging the Lightning Network to really ensure these transactions are near instant and low cost, you know, making it practical for these smaller businesses. And they also offer, you know, features like Bitcoin conversions, allowing these merchants to automatically essentially convert a portion of their daily sales into Bitcoin. That's huge. That's, I mean, really game changing. And this is, I don't think it's just a pilot program. Like Block is rolling this again out to all of the Square sellers, you know, subject to regulatory approvals, obviously, but it's happening and it's coming. And this, I think, signifies a massive step toward making Bitcoin a truly, you know, usable currency in the real economy we live in today. And it demonstrates a belief that Bitcoin can empower merchants by offering them more options for payments. And these implications, guys, are truly profound. You know, when businesses of all sizes can start to easily accept and hold Bitcoin, it begins to create, you know, this powerful feedback loop. more acceptance, you know, drives more usage naturally, which drives, I think, more, you know, infrastructure development as well, which is part of the loop. And corporate America, I don't think, is just dipping their toes in it anymore. It's increasingly diving in headfirst at this point, recognizing the immense potential of Bitcoin to revolutionize financial operations and customer engagement. I've been saying this for years now, but I think we're finally starting to see it happen. I'm stoked for it. So now I think it's important to address, you know, maybe the biggest question. Maybe not the biggest, but, you know, a bigger question. You know, what does it look like when the world, and specifically America, truly switches over to a Bitcoin standard? And is it even possible, say, even in, you know, in our lifetime? I guess, I think starting out, we need to at least define, you know, what is the Bitcoin standard? What would it entail? And it's not necessarily about everyone, you know, paying for their groceries exclusively with Bitcoin, you know, say tomorrow. But I think instead it implies a monetary system where Bitcoin reserves, or Bitcoin serves as the primary global reserve asset. You know, similar to how gold historically functioned until the early 70s. National currencies might still exist, but they would be essentially, you know, pegged to Bitcoin, or their value would be heavily influenced by Bitcoin's price. It would reverse. Central banks, if they even exist, you know, in their current form, would hold Bitcoin as their primary reserve as well, rather than, you know, say other fiat currencies or gold. So what does this transition look like? I mean, it's unlikely to be, you know, a sudden overnight flip. Instead, you know, I think it will be gradual. It will be multifaceted in the process, and it'll be driven by several factors. You know, I think one major driver is the continued adoption by corporations and institutions, as we spoke of earlier. As more companies, again, begin to follow suit, the demand for Bitcoin, you know, increases. Its liquidity deepens, and the legitimacy as the global asset solidifies. And this creates a positive feedback loop, as we just spoke of. You know, more corporate adoption, more infrastructure, more usability, which in turn drives more adoption. And secondly, I think the nation state adoption. While El Salvador famously adopted Bitcoin as a legal tender, we're still seeing an increasing number of countries exploring and even accumulating Bitcoin as a strategic reserve asset. And even recent reports and predictions suggest that. Hold on, I'm making a U-turn. Suggests that countries, especially those particularly facing high inflation or seeking to de-dollarize, might increasingly turn to Bitcoin. And, you know, we've seen discussions around nations establishing, you know, strategic Bitcoin reserves, treating Bitcoin essentially as a new form of reserve asset to hedge against economic uncertainty and position themselves for the future. And that idea, the idea is that having a fixed supply asset, independent of geopolitical whims, you know, or the printing presses of other nations, provides a degree of economic sovereignty. which again I think is huge. And thirdly, the technological advancements and infrastructure development, the Lightning Network, as mentioned, is such a critical thing for scaling Bitcoin for everyday transactions. Further innovations in usability, security, and definitely accessibility will make Bitcoin more user-friendly for the general public. And as self-custody, I think, as self-custody solutions like, blocks, BitKey become more, commonplace, and as user interfaces become more intuitive, the barriers to entry for individuals will diminish significantly. Which leads to the next point, regulatory clarity and innovation. Governments and regulators are still grappling with how to classify and regulate Bitcoin. However, as the asset matures and its adoption grows, there's there's a growing incentive, I think, for a clear and supportive regulatory framework. This doesn't mean a complete hands-off approach, but I think rather regulations that foster innovation while protecting consumers and ensuring market integrity. A robust regulatory environment will instill greater confidence for institutional and mainstream adoption, no doubt. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, a loss of faith in the existing fiat system. As inflation continues to persist, national debts continue to mount, and as central banks continue to expand their balance sheets, the public's trust in traditional fiat currencies may erode even further. And I think it already has, really. When people realize that their savings are, constantly being devalued, they will naturally seek alternatives. And Bitcoin, with its unchangeable monetary policy and decentralized nature, presents itself, as a compelling solution to these systematic issues. And so what will this look like for everyday Americans? Initially it might mean, more options for payment, more companies holding Bitcoin, and potentially more, accessible investment vehicles. Where am I going here? Over time, as Bitcoin, becomes more stable and widely accepted, it could lead to a world, I think it will lead to a world with more sound money. Less inflation, and potentially greater economic freedom. It's truly a vision of a world where the power of money is decentralized, moving from the hands, of the central banks to the hands of individuals, governed by, transparent code rather than, these arbitrary decrees. The transition won't be without its challenges for sure, or its regulatory hurdles, even the technological scaling, and maybe even some of the, deeply ingrained societal, habits around money. But I think the trajectory is clear. The forces of the technological innovation, economic necessity, and a growing recognition of Bitcoin's unique properties are pushing us towards a future where a Bitcoin standard is not just, a dream, but a tangible possibility. And, as I wrap up, the rest of this episode, I hope I've shed some light on this profound transformation. I started with, the foundational principles of market economics and reminding us the importance of sound money and minimal intervention. And then we looked at, how Bitcoin, with its fixed supply and decentralized nature, offers such a compelling alternative to our current fiat system, truly acting as a powerful hedge against inflation truly a catalyst for financial innovation. We've seen tangible evidence of this shift in corporate America as they continue to adopt Bitcoin, like MicroStrategy and Block, truly actively building the infrastructure to make Bitcoin accessible for everyday commerce through their market, their Square terminals. This isn't just about, the tech giants, though, guys. It's about making Bitcoin a viable option for small businesses and consumers alike. The vision of a Bitcoin standard might seem, a little futuristic, but I think the seeds are already being sown. I think it's a future where money is truly scarce. It's transparent and beyond the reach of arbitrary political manipulation. It's a future that promises, greater economic freedom and a more level playing field for everyone else. And most of us have never seen that in our lifetime. And this journey from the fiat world to a Bitcoin standard, it's not going to be linear, I don't think. There will undoubtedly be, bumps along the road. But the momentum at this point is undeniable. As individuals and businesses and, even nation states increasingly recognize their inherent, the advantages of a truly decentralized sound money system, that transition will continue to accelerate, I think at a rapid speed. So I can't wait to see it. This is the fun part of watching it play out. I appreciate you guys joining me on this episode of Commute Compute. I don't think this conversation is over by any means, and I definitely encourage you to keep learning, asking questions and engaging with these ideas, because I think your understanding and participation are what will truly shape the future of money. So until next time, keep commuting, stay sovereign, stay free, keep asking questions, push against the system. And if you like this episode, share with a friend. Go ahead and follow me. Shoot me over some zaps on the Fountain app. Follow me on Nostra. I'm Contra. This is episode 23. I'm out.